Well, I want to welcome you all on this Mother's Day, and we give thanks for our mothers. It has long been the custom of our diocese to honor our mothers or other significant women in our lives on Mother's Day. We always have a world mission focus through our diocese, which is so very active around the world in world mission. And today we're very honored to have a special friend of ours and the Threads of Blessing Ministry, Helen and Gary Schnelzer. You may recall 4 years ago, Elizabeth and I and our boys went with them to Uganda and really enjoyed an amazing long-standing relationship that our diocese has had with the Church of Uganda. And directly through Helen and Gary's ministry, we have spread so much love and goodwill and really changed lives in the lives of women of Uganda. And this ministry of Threads of Blessing has spread to other countries as well. And I'm pleased to invite Helen Schnelzer to come forward at this time. And she's going to share with you a little bit about the history of this ministry and the impact that it's had in so many women's lives around the world. So thank you so much, Helen, for being with us today.
Thank you. Good morning. It's a joy for me to be here with you and to be able to tell you a little bit about the work of Threads of Blessing. Threads of Blessing began in 1997 when the previous Bishop of Honduras invited Brenda Kingery, an artist in San Antonio, to make him a banner. And Brenda explained that that really wasn't what she did. However, if he would suggest some villages in Honduras, she would take a team and go there and have the women in Honduras make him a banner. And so they did that. The women were a little amazed at what they were being asked to do, but they discovered within themselves artistry that they didn't know existed, and creativity that they didn't know was there. And so for the next 3 years, Brenda and her team went back to Uganda and helped the women start this industry, and they returned all the funds back to the women. And then the ministry seemed to fade in Uganda, in Honduras, for a number of years. But the ministry in San Antonio, with the women who had gathered from that first mission and had since gathered more people, that didn't fade. That grew. And they discovered that they were a support for each other, so it was a ministry within a ministry. And for the next, goodness me, 10, 15 years, it went on like that, with them making banners that they shared with other churches or sold, with the money always going to serve women. And then in 2004, Gary and I were in Uganda. It was our fifth trip to that country, our first having been in 1999, when we went with Bishop Jim Foltz and his wife Sandy and a small team to go and visit the Diocese of Nebbi in the northwest corner of Uganda, up against the Congolese border. Actually, you can just walk down the hill and across a bridge and you're in Congo. And so we went there. And in 2004, I had a discussion with the women. The women's center that this diocese had found, raised the funds to build, this diocese raised over $400,000 in a little more than 4 years to help fulfill a dream of Mama Phoebe. She had been taken out of school by her father when she was in third grade. And this was the tradition for many, many young women in the previous generation. Now education is mandatory through the sixth grade, which is still not far, but it's better than third grade. And Mama Phoebe wanted a women's center, a center where women could come together and learn to hear and read the Bible for themselves, where they didn't have to listen to another person's interpretation. And she wanted them to be able to write more than an X for their name. And she wanted them to be able to know simple math, simple arithmetic. And the women and I had this discussion as to what else they could have. We talked about knitting, we talked about tailoring, which would be dressmaking, we talked about catering, because when they cook at night, they seldom cook for more than 15 or 20 people with their families and extended families. So it's cooking, but it's also catering, certainly. And then I suggested to them, what about needlework? Had they thought of that? Well, they said they'd learnt that when they were in primary school, but it didn't have much money in it for them. They certainly couldn't get much money for it in Uganda. I said, well, maybe we could take a few pieces back to the US and see if we could sell them for you. Well, they thought about it for a while. They thought, yes, they'd like to try that. So the following year, I took Brenda and her husband, Tom, and Gary and I, and Janet Fenton, wife of a clergy in the diocese too, and we went back to Uganda and did our first workshop with 30 women attending. Well, it was a glorious, wonderful time. And that was the very first one. Every year we've done one since, and they've grown in size. We now had 228 women attend the conference in December last year. And the stories that are coming out of it, and the expertise and the artistry, is just amazing. We encourage the women to learn to be artists, not just to do a piece of needlework because it will bring them some money. If they can learn to bring out the artistry in them, this is what helps them grow their self-esteem, their confidence. And our workroom is in the basement of the diocese. They've given us two wonderful rooms down there with floor-to-ceiling windows, and they don't charge us any rent. So because we have no expenses, we're able to give the women 100% of everything that they earn from the sale of their pieces. And it's changing their lives. We have another group in Honduras, and it's doing as well. That started in 2014. But what I'd like to do is to help you imagine a family in Uganda. The father, we'll call him Peter, he has a good job. He earns $75 a month. And it's amazing what that does in a third world country. Their houses are built of mud bricks, which they make themselves and form into a great tower. They would do this with their neighbors, and inside the tower they would build a fire, and they keep the fire burning for days, weeks, I'm not too sure how long it takes, to bake the bricks, and then they can build, using those bricks, build their houses. Now, a house is not a house as we know it, it's a compound. And in that compound would be four or five huts, all made of these mud bricks with thatched roofs. One would be a bedroom where the family sleeps. Another would be for entertaining, where they probably eat their meals. Another one would be a storage place where they would keep their clothes stacked in neat piles, and where they would keep their cooking utensils. Cooking was done outside on an open fire. And then there would be a washroom made of cinder blocks and painted with an enamel paint on the inside so the water just slides off. And there would be a latrine. And this would be the compound that they would sleep in. So Peter, and we'll call his wife Joyce, they have four children, and they have such a compound, and they've done well. They also have some crops. They have been able to buy fields, and so they can grow their own things. So they're self-sustaining for themselves. Let's say they have four children in elementary school, but the first child is about to graduate and go to secondary school. Now, secondary school in Uganda is done in residence. All the children from the areas gather because not as many go on to secondary school. And so the child has to go on to secondary school, and that means boarding fees. It means requirements, uniforms. The child would have to have a mattress, mosquito net, all sorts of things. The school would give them a long list of all the things that were required. And until they can fulfill this, the payment for the first term would be about between $200 and $300. Now remember, Peter only makes $75 a month. But they would have been saving for this. They can sell their crops at market. They can barter with each other. They would have had they'd have chickens and goats. So they can barter. So he could come up with the money probably for the first year without too much problem. So then, once they've got that done, then they have to think, how are they going to go on like this? Joyce needs to work, but she's so busy at home, taking care of cooking meals and taking care of fetching water. Family would be up by 4 o'clock every morning, going to the fields before they go to work. And so what's she going to do? And then she hears about a group of women who are meeting at the women's center every week. And they're doing needlework and Bible study. And she hasn't done needlework for so long. She doesn't know whether she could do it anymore. But she decides to go. And what she finds when she gets there is absolutely amazing. She finds a group of women who are learning to do needlework, certainly. But more than that, they're learning to share with each other. They're building community. They're learning to share the things that are joyful, the things that are painful, talking about their children in school. Now, she's known her neighbor enough to wave to her when she comes back from the field, but she doesn't really know her because she's tired when she comes back from the field. So she just sits on a stump outside or on a stool and just waves to her neighbor, but she knows nothing about her, the lifestyle that her neighbors would be living. And so in this group, she's seeing people who are laughing, joyful, sharing the Lord, doing their needlework, and better than that, they get money for it. Once a year, the team comes from America, and they bring them the funds for any needlework that's sold. And the women tell her, we're able to pay for our children's school fees. Well, she's delighted with this. So now I want to switch, and this is where Joyce and the family are, and I want to talk to you about what it is for us to go there. Last year we returned over $35,000 in needlework sales to the women. And on top of that, we did about another $15,000 in scholarships. And so every woman who comes to the conference is scholarshiped. $75 at what it cost us to scholarship one woman. That means her bus fare to and from her home, with a little money for food out the window of the bus to the vendors, so a little money so she can buy food, because bus rides are often 12 hours long. And on the way to the conference, other people from different areas will come. We have probably 500 or 600 women involved all over Uganda, involved in this ministry now. And so people would get on the bus and join her, and they're coming from different tribes, so we're breaking down tribal barriers too. Some of them will tell us that they never knew thought that they would ever leave their own villages, let alone have friends on the other side of the country and from a different tribe. And many of them don't speak each other's languages. All they have is English. So the English, they have to learn their English, practice their English so that they can come. And when they come, they arrive on Monday, and throughout the day on various buses and various vans, on the backs of pickups, all sorts of things. And by the evening, the place is full of joy and singing and laughter and praising God. We talk about our faith here. These people, they know the Lord in such an amazing way. He is all that they have. He provides the rain that helps the crops grow, and then he provides the sun. Everything comes from the Lord. If we come on a rainy day, they'll almost be on their hands and knees thanking us for bringing the blessing. And here we are slopping around in mud and trying to keep our feet dry and thinking about our feet. and all they can do is just praise the Lord. So we have a very joyful time. We have praise and worship, then we have Bible study. Each year we set a theme for the Bible study, and this year the theme was from Mark's Gospel in the last chapter, "Who will roll the stone away for us?" And this was the three women, Mary Magdalene, and Salome, who went to Jesus' tomb to take care of the body, and wondering who was going to roll the stone away for us. So we talked about these women, these strong women, women committed to their Lord, but who also knew how much He loved them. And out of this, their confidence grows as they share, and we try and encourage them. Confidence grows, and what we're finding now is that with some of their funds, they'll put it aside until they're in a group and they have enough, and they'll form a savings and loan, and their own micro enterprise begins, where they will collect money until they have enough for one person to borrow it, and that person can borrow it for 4 months, and at the end of the time she returns it with 10% interest, and so it grows. One group has done this for so long now that they had enough in their fund to pay each of them a small dividend. This was after they'd had to learn about what it was to save money, and this was out of the end of their grocery money, which might amount to 25 or 30 cents at the end of the week, but they learned to save it. And so they gave themselves dividends twice, because they just weren't using some of the money that they'd put together. And the third time they decided no more. They were going to go into business for themselves. And what they've done, when you have a baptism, a death, any celebration of any kind in Uganda, you invite the whole community. And when I say community, that could be up to 1,000 people, hundreds and hundreds. They would all come, and they have to be fed. So you've got to have a lot of great, huge stock pots, a lot of melamine plates, lace tablecloths, on and on and on. And so they decided they would go into the rental business. And one night when we were visiting one of the leaders, she said to another of the women, "Pull out the boxes to show them." Well, there were 300 melamine plates. There were 6 stock pots. And it just went on and on. So they've done extremely well with their ministry. Now they're up to buying plastic chairs. That was what they told us last year. That was the next on their list for their business. But as they do this, you see them standing taller. You see them understanding that with God, there are no limits to what they can do. And it's a joy for us. One of the stories, when the women got their money this time, one of the leaders, her mother had died, and she had no money for a burial. And so with the funds that came, we were there, I think, a couple of weeks after her mother had passed away, with the money that was left from her needlework, that she was able to, it was exactly the amount she needed to pay for her mother to have a proper burial. And it was a great joy to her. Many times we hear that the money for their needlework covers exactly the amount that of the school fees that they need for the next term, or if a child's been sent home. We had one woman who was HIV positive. And many years ago, that was, to be HIV positive, you had to pay for the medication. Now, because of the United States, medication for HIV is free to everybody. But at this time, Beatrice had to, when we first met her, she was looking for people who would take care of her children for her. People who would, because she knew she was dying, she was a widow and she was caring for her mother. And so the first year that we left, we didn't know if we'd see her the next year, but she was there. And so we gave her the funds that she had earned for her needlework. And she went right off to the health clinic and got medication for her to take care of her condition. And now that woman looks wonderful. HIV is not curable, it's controllable. And she's put two sons through university and has three more children in secondary school. And I could tell you a lot more stories like that too. But I'm so grateful to be here with you all, and thank you so much for inviting us and including us in your worship. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Helen.